They say morning routines are key, and they couldn't be any more right. Use this key to unlock your full potential. Hi, I'm Byron Pringle, and I'm a professional morning routine coach. Your potential is like that lock. Using your morning routine as the key to unlock your success is something every entrepreneur or successful individual strive to do. If you don't have a morning routine, or if you have an existing morning routine that fails you, or if you don't feel like you're hitting your goals, don't worry. I've created a free Facebook group with like-minded individuals like yourself that are developing their morning routine, challenging their mindset, and yes, most importantly, getting more stuff done to make more money. If you are interested in leveling up your morning routine, click on the link in the show notes and sign up for our free Facebook group. So, what are you waiting for? It's already 10 a.m. and the morning is about over with. Sign up today and start making your morning routine work for you. We'll see you in the morning. Although money cannot buy you happiness, it can bring you a sense of security. Without a handle on money management, you may always feel like your life is one step away from a financial cliff. In fact, 25% of Americans say they worry about money all the time, and studies have proven that two-thirds of Americans would struggle to find $1,000 to cover a financial crisis. You definitely don't want to be in this situation. On this week's episode of the Rise Up Motivational Podcast, I am joined with my good friend Patrick Gavin as he shares his insights on how to better manage your finances and how to get ahead. Patrick has worked in the banking industry for almost 16 years, and he has worked his way from being a teller to a loan officer, a bank manager, and now he manages collections, does loan documentation prep, and loan operations for a $1 billion bank between two states. So, if you're struggling, or if you're just looking for sound advice to get ahead in your finances, you're on the right podcast. So, let's go ahead and cue the introduction. Good morning, my wonderful and most talented listenership. Welcome to Session 37 of the Rise Up Motivational Podcast. As always, my name is Byron Pringle, and I'll be your podcast host and morning routine coach here to help you create the lifestyle you've always dreamed of by identifying your goals, crushing your limited beliefs, and most importantly, working towards a future filled with possibilities. Today, I am joined with my good friend, Patrick Gavin. He is a financial professional who has worked in the banking industry for almost 16 years, and he is here today to share his insights and his advice on how to better manage your finances. So without further ado, let's go ahead and welcome Patrick to the show. Hey, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Byron.
So tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit of your background history and what led you to be who you are today.
Sure. So I am a banker right now. I've been in banking for 16 years. Just kind of fell into it in high school. Something I fell in love with pretty quick just because all the numbers and the math and that kind of thing. Just turned into a real good fit for me, and it wasn't something I was ever planning on, but when something starts working out, you kind of stick with it. So I have kind of worked my way up through banking, being a lot of different positions, spent a lot of time being a lender and doing different things there, and currently kind of oversee loan operations and some of the backroom stuff. I also work a lot with customers that are having financial difficulties. We sit down and go over finances, review their situation and see what we can do and put them in a better spot and help get their life back on track.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been in the banking finance field for about 16 years, right?
That's right.
For those who don't know, so Patrick and I actually graduated the same year in high school in 2006. And it just blows my mind to think it's been 15 years.
I know, it's been a long, it's crazy. Things have changed a lot since then.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. So why don't you tell me a little bit about what motivates you in your current position?
I guess the big thing that kind of drew me to banking is being able to help people. There's a lot of people that don't know what to do with money or how to handle finances. And there's a lot of people that the majority of people don't ask for help. It's one of those things that's kind of not talked about a lot. There's a lot of kind of lectures, but not talked about. And so I really enjoyed to be able to sit down with people and help people. And most people I work with are experiencing some severe financial difficulties. You know, a lot of times divorce is one of the biggest ones. And it's kind of that point in your life that you just feel so overwhelmed and you don't know what to do from there. And when you work in banking, those are the people that's the most rewarding to be able to help and get to, you know, get them to a different place and really see their lives better. And that's just been one of the most rewarding things that made me stick with banking, just because of how good it feels.
Okay, absolutely. So why don't you go ahead and speak a little bit more to that? So if, say, for example, if someone, you said you work in lending, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So say, for example, if someone is looking at applying for a mortgage, so what steps would they have to take in order to be qualified?
So there's a lot of programs out there to help people. And that's the big thing that a lot of people don't know or look into is, you know, they think that you have to have this certain credit score. You have to have this amount of money down. But there's a lot of government programs that can be out there, right, that can help you if you get with a lender that knows those kind of programs and can help you with it. One of the big things that does come down to it is knowing what your lifestyle is actually going to be. A lot of people, you can look at numbers, and in a lot of banking, when you approve a loan, it's based on percentages and what someone could afford if they manage their money, you know, to the optimal percentage. So the big thing is that people need to be honest with themselves. When you start looking at houses and you start looking at your budget and the bank says you can afford $1,000 a month, realizing how that's going to work into your budget and what kind of lifestyle you're actually going to have if you're making that high of a payment. And you got to really be honest with yourself and really sit down and figure out your finances and budget and know where you want to be and what you want to do, so that way you can get a house that you can actually afford, not just what maybe the bank says you can afford.
I actually had a listener reach out to me the other day because I did a little bit of some pre-promotional about this episode. So now this listener was wondering, like, how much money do you need down ideally to be pre-qualified for a home?
Sure.
Or do you necessarily need any money down?
Yeah, there's some first-time homebuyer programs through the government. There's some different qualifications that have to come into play, largely around the house. Some of the rules that are with it, like it can have some peeling paint, you know, they have to fix things like that before you do it. But there's no money down loans. The big thing is when you start getting the government programs is the interest rate is something that you have to look at. A lot of times when you get those government programs, it's a little bit higher interest rate. But if you're going from renting and you're looking at buying a house you're going to live in forever, it can be worth it to you to get into that now. From there, about every 5% that you can put down is going to save you money in the long run. It's going to drop your interest rate. There's also a thing called PMI, which is private mortgage insurance. Different programs have different requirements for PMI. So a lot of times what that is that if the value of your home to your loan, that's called your loan to value, is 80% or above that, sometimes it's 90% depending on the program, you have to pay this insurance, which is the PMI, that if you were to default, it helps pay the bank back. So really there's a lot of options out there, from anything from no down payment to 20% down usually gets you your best interest rate and really gets you more doors open. But just because you don't have that doesn't mean you can't get a loan. Here in Iowa, there's also a lot of government programs that they'll give you like $5,000 down payment assistance. There's been different things throughout history too. Like when I happened to buy my first house, the government had a program where they would match part of my down payment. And so there's different things out there. You just got to go out and start talking with your banker and asking them and let them know what you want to do and start seeing what kind of options you have for your situation.
Yeah, I think a lot of people too, I'm not a homeowner, not yet, but I'm kind of in the market at looking at buying a house. But I know I've had a lot of people ask me like their credit. So if you don't have next to perfect credit, like what would you advise them to do if they want to build their existing credit?
Sure. Once again, there's a lot of different options depending on your credit. It used to be you had to have a 700 credit score, which is a pretty high number to get a home loan. That number has really came down a lot. You can get down to 640 and get approvals in some of those programs. So there is options. If you have not so great credit, the big thing is to start looking at why. There's a lot of free programs out there like Credit Karma, for instance, that you can monitor your credit. The big thing about credit is just making your payments on time. There's a lot of wise tales out there that aren't true. Like sometimes I would hear that if you have a credit card, you have to go out and use it at the grocery store to make a payment. Otherwise, it doesn't count towards your credit. It's not really true. When you look at a credit report, you can't tell whether or not you made a payment that month or if the balance was zero. All it's going to say is that you weren't late. That's one of the things to consider. There's a lot of things that go into the logarithm that makes up your credit score. A lot of it is also derived on the different kinds of credit. So if you have a credit card and if you have an installment loan, which is like a car loan. So those are two different factors that kind of go into your credit score and help it build it. If you don't have a credit card and all you have is a car loan, you're missing a big piece that goes into that score that helps build it. And then also how much is used on your credit card. So if you have a credit card with the limit of $1,000 and you have $950 on it, that really drops down your credit score because your credit score moves all the time. And what it is, it's essentially a risk of you defaulting on your loan. So if you have a credit card and you make a big purchase, that your score is going to drop and it's going to wait to see how you handle that purchase. Which is where credit history comes from, you know, those ups and downs throughout time and how you can handle it. When your credit's pulled, if you have that $1,000 credit card and you have $0 on it and it's been open a while, that tells the banks and the credit score companies that you can have money available to you and not spend it, that you're responsible with it. And so that's going to help your score go up. So there's a lot of little things like that that I don't want to really call them tricks, but little things that kind of go into that people aren't really aware of that can really boost your score besides just having, you know, many years on your credit report.
I heard of an old wise tale that it's important to have multiple credit lines open at once. So would you advise if, say, for example, if someone is struggling to build their credit report, to have multiple credit lines open as far as like with credit cards, or just have one or two credit cards open and just consistently making payments on those?
Sure. There's a lot of different things, and it starts to get weighted is how I would phrase it. It's not so much how many you have open. It's more of what your history is and how you did with those being open. Yes, if you have, I believe the optimum for like Equifax is to have three open credit cards. Now, with that being said, you know, you got to know yourself. If you have three credit cards, are you going to spend them? Because if you are, then it's probably not a good decision to have three. But that's to reach that high point, that maximum 818 credit score or 850. Just because you only have one or you have two doesn't mean that you're missing out on 50 credit score points or 100 credit score points. It just means that you're not going to hit that absolute top. It's the same thing that people really worry about when your credit gets pulled, those credit dings. It's true. When you apply for a loan, like a lot of inquiries within a short time, it can hurt your credit score, but that's generally only when you're first starting out with credit. If you've had credit for years and you apply for loans, you have your credit pulled once, twice, or three times, it's not going to start plummeting your score. It might drop at 1 or 2 points, but a lot of those things don't have near the effect that people make them out to.
What are some opportunities that you found while working the banking finance? What areas did you find the most achievement through working your career?
Sure. I would say that the main area that I've kind of noticed in banking has been how people leverage their assets and their debts. And what I mean by that is when you look at your what's called your balance sheet. It's everything you own versus everything you owe. So it's all your assets and your liabilities, and how you have those structured is a very important piece that a lot of people don't realize and that they don't look at. So a big one is, let's say you have your house, and if your house is worth, you know, $80,000 and you only owe $60,000, you have equity in your house. So that's $20,000 in there that you could use and you could leverage and let's say get a loan against that compared to having these credit cards out there. So what I see when people sit down, they come sit down with me and they say, you know, I can't afford my monthly payments. That's one of the first things that I start looking at is how do you have your finances structured? Credit cards are really high interest. And once you start getting them, it's very, very hard to get out from underneath them once you build that debt. So, you know, if you have something like even a car is going to be a much lower interest rate. So if you're sitting here and you own your car, but you have $5,000 in credit card debt that you're paying 20-25% on, well, look, we could, you know, finance that into your car and pay this off within, you know, 3 years at the same payment and just save you a large amount of money. So it's just knowing how to structure debt instead of just thinking this is how I pay for it or this is where it goes.
So say, for example, if you have, a hospital bill that's in collections, so it's dinging on your credit report. So I know some collectors, you can settle for less than the amount owed, or you can settle in full. What would you advise on that? Would it matter if you settle for half of the amount or whatever the amount might look like, or would you advise to settle for the entire amount, and how would that affect your credit?
Sure. There was actually, in my opinion, a very good change that was passed. I believe it's been a few years now, where medical collections hurt your score a lot less. Because a lot of people have medical collections. A lot of people get those because they don't even ever receive the hospital bill. The first thing that I would say is whenever you're getting past due or you have a collection account or you have something like that, call the place that you owe money to and ask them what their options are. Because a lot of times they're willing to work with you. You know, set up a payment plan. Hospitals generally have to work with you. So if you have a bill and they say you owe them $300, and you say, I can afford $50 a month payment, that they will generally accept it and work with you. Now, it varies by hospital, but a lot of times they will, because they're going to at least get a payment structure set up that's going to look good, in that as long as you stick with that, they're going to let you keep on with that. As far as settling for the less the amount owed, that does report on your credit report, and it shows it, and it does hurt you. But that hurts you less than if you just leave it out there and if you did nothing with it, because it shows that you're at least trying. So if you don't have any other options, then I would recommend to go that route if that's where you're kind of backed into. But first of all, I would say contact those places and ask them what options that they may have to work with you.
Okay, absolutely. And what about closed accounts? Say, for example, if you do owe the hospital or say another collector, like a credit card company, and if you looked at your credit report and said the account was closed, so would it be worth paying that balance, getting hold of that creditor? And if you do, would it actually affect your credit score as far as bringing it up? Or I mean, how does that work?
Sure. Everything that you do to pay those debts back will help your credit score. It's going to record what the balance was last month and that you made a payment and that it went down. It's also going to state how much your monthly payment is on that you set up. And it's going to say paid as agreed generally when they set up those payment plans. When you close a trade line is what those are called on your credit bureau, it will say if it was closed by the credit grantor, which would mean, you know, the credit card company closed it against your will. That's going to hurt you a little bit more than, you know, if you did it yourself. So those are all factors in it. But once again, I go back to, if you're trying and if you're making payments, your credit score and your credit report is going to reflect that. So everything that you do and everything that you set up is going to start working towards those. The biggest thing that you can do is to actually, you know, see what kind of options they are to pay them off in full and in lump sums, even if that's to refinance them into a different debt or something like that, if it's your option, because then every month from then on, your credit score is going to go up. Because once you have a late pay or you have a collection, every month it dings you a little bit less as time goes on. And so that's the big thing, is getting that time established to start that mark that here, from now on, my score is going to start getting better. So whatever you need to do to get that clock ticking to have that forward momentum.
Okay, so I want to shift gears here. Budgeting. We've covered last couple episodes on our podcast about how to properly budget your household income. So figuring out how much you make versus what expenses are growing out, and then how to reinvest whatever's left over, rather if it is putting back in your savings or looking at different investment options for like passive income wise. So we covered, I don't know if you're familiar with the 50-30-20 rule, where 50% of your income is supposed to go to...
No,
you've never heard? Okay. So the 50-30-20 rule applies that 50% of your income should go to necessities, 30% should go to wants, and 20% is supposed to be set back in your savings. So in your experience, do you have any other budgeting models that you would like to share that might be some interest or could... help our listenership to save money and get their bills paid on time?
Sure. The big one that we use in the banking world is your established debts. So like your car loan payments and your rent and your credit card payments. So all of those kind of things that would show up in your credit bureau report and then your rent. And what you want that to be is generally under 35% of your gross income in a month. Once you start getting over 35%, you really start feeling the struggle from those. So when you start looking at numbers, and that's just a general number, and some places will go up to 45%, but when you start throwing in things like daycare, I mean, there's a lot of things that can really move that needle. So that's generally one of the first things that I look at is what's that ratio. And then we start going into your other expenditures, because you know, you're gonna have your necessities that are gonna be generally standard percentage on your, you know, living aspects like your cell phone and your utilities and things like that. And then from there, it's a similar system to your 50-30-20, but your big one then that you're gonna hit is gonna be those wants and the non-necessities and how much money goes in there, which is usually, you know, 90% of the time that's where all the problems lie.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I'm going to pitch you a scenario here, Patrick. So say, for example, I have some money to invest. So what options are out there in the banking finance world that I can put money towards to build interest or kind of build a kind of like a financial savings?
Well, I'll tell you right now, the market's always either in favor of the borrowers or in favor of the depositors. And right now it's a borrower's market. So that means that if you go to a bank and you want to deposit money, you're not going to have hardly anything on a return. I mean, there was a time when I started in banking, which to me doesn't seem that long ago, but you know, when we were just talking about, it's been, you know, 15 years since high school. When I started, we were paying, it was 5.75% on the checking account.
Yeah.
When I started, which you're not going to get that anymore. So it's important to have a mixture is what I would say. The big thing is to have those, you know, mutual funds kind of aspects and to diversify yourself. You want to have some things that are liquid, which is why I always encourage a savings account for those emergencies. Your return on that kind of thing is not going to be that much. It's going to be fairly low. But when you split up your budget and your 20% that you're going to be investing and doing things with, have a percentage of that that's in your savings account, which is your guaranteed funds that's not going to go down any. And then your other things that you're going to go with, your investments or what you choose to play with from there, split it off from there. But a lot of people miss that savings account aspect, that even though the return's not there in the long time, it's an important thing, especially when the market goes down in your other areas.
Yeah, absolutely. So how important is it to have a savings account?
In my opinion,
I know this is a very standard question, but
it's extremely important, because how often does something come up that you weren't expected? I mean, is it weekly, bi-weekly? You know, it's at least monthly. There's always those things that come up. And if you're not prepared for them, if you're not taking the opportunity when things are good to prepare for the bad, it's going to make it that much worse. Especially if your listeners are researching buying houses and improving their finances, and if they've had troubles in the past, it's going to make it a lot harder to weather those bad times if you weren't prepared in the good times. Right now we're talking a lot with customers in the stimulus payments, and some of them are getting, you know, $7,000, you know, $8,500, and well, $8,400, but different dollar amounts. And my big question when we're talking about these opportunities is, okay, you know, maybe you didn't lose your job, or, you know, maybe you're not having severe difficulties. Take this opportunity that's been given to those that haven't had things as rough as others to save and prepare to weather the storm, because it's going to come. It's not a question of if. So it's very important to have something like that, because otherwise when you get in those rush situations, those are the ones that's going to take a lot longer to dig out. And those are the times that people turn to credit cards frequently too, where they're putting groceries and bills and things on that. And it's gonna put you back overall in the big picture as you try and dig out of there.
Yeah, absolutely. Share a little bit of a story with me. So with our second stimulus check, so I ended up getting the $600. So I had an opportunity to put the money towards an investment that I wanted to put towards my podcast. But I then decided, like, I'm going to put this back in my savings. Just, again, to your point, you know, whenever that storm may brew, you know, I had those funds available. And literally not even a week later, I had some car problems. And if I did not have that savings, that cushion there, I'd been in a lot of trouble. So I think that's just one thing, like, they call it shiny object syndrome. It's like when you see something and you have that impulse to, like, oh, I've got the funds, I'm going to go ahead and buy it. And then something comes up, and then you're like, I don't have any savings, so now I'm going to, like, talk about the 50-30-20 rule. Now, because you don't have that savings, you're going to have to dip into either the money that you're going to spend on your essentials or in your wants. So that money's going to have to come out of somewhere, and someone's not going to get paid.
Exactly. So. And then that comes up all the time. I'll tell you, I'm the same kind of person. I'm the ooh, shiny object kind of guy. And I go the extent that I have my savings account and I told my bank, I'm like, I don't even want it on my mobile banking. I don't want to see it there. I want to have it out of sight, out of mind, so I'm not tempted. Because otherwise you're going to see that thing and think, I have that money sitting back there. It'll be okay. I can replenish it later.
Let me ask you from your profession here. So what are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities that a finance professional like yourself may have faced in the most recent years, especially during, like, COVID and such?
Yeah, we have a lot of ups and downs. I've spent a lot of time, like I said, working with borrowers that have been extremely troubled and you know, are facing foreclosure and those kind of things. So my job's kind of inverted to what most of the other banking is, that when the economy is really good, that my job's slow. It's when the economy dips that I get really busy. And so that's been a lot of my challenges. 2008 was a big one, which that's been a long time ago. But, you know, every 4 or 5 years, there's a dip when things go down, when we went through the housing crisis and things like that. Right now, there's a lot of warning signs in the ag industry. That creates those, that, you know, something's starting and could be going. The ag industry's been way too good for way too long. You know, in the banking industry, we say it's generally about a 7-year cycle where it goes up and then it's going to drop. Well, we've been going up for so long, since we kind of, you know, got over that hump from the housing crisis, that we're due for another solid drop. So those are generally the challenges, is related to the economy, when people lose their jobs. And that was the big thing of COVID, was, you know, we had people that were getting sent home that didn't have PTO, and you know, how are they going to pay their bills? What are they going to do? Well, what a lot of people don't realize is that when a bank helps you, when we look at our options, there's a lot of regulations that come into play, and you know, we say, okay, we're going to skip this person's payment. You know, we're going to give you 3 months without a payment. The way the government makes us look at those loans then is we have to essentially set that loan aside for the life of the loan. So if you have a house loan, you know, it could be 30 years that we have to set it aside in the special bucket and report this dollar amount as this could, you know, go bad, which, you know, to a lot of people, you know, they may not quite understand that. But when you start helping hundreds of people and thousands of people, the bucket can get really, really big, which luckily the government passed a law that made us not put those houses and those loans into the bucket during COVID. So we've been kind of had free reign where we can help people. So we've been giving out deferrals left and right through COVID of, you know, people getting sent home to quarantine. Like, okay, I completely understand. Let's skip a payment, you know, make your escrow payment so you don't get behind on interest and taxes. And then, you know, hopefully when you get back to work here, we'll give you some cushion and get back in place. So it's been a very challenging year, but from all my history in banking, I've had more tools to help people over the past just about a year now. April's really when the tools started coming out from the government that we've really been able to help people and get them in a better place. So it's been one of the most challenging, but also the most rewarding years.
What kind of advice would you give to your listenership that is looking for maybe they're trying to work on improving their credit or maybe try to build that savings, you know, from your experience, what advice would you give to them?
I would say the biggest thing that would help people is when you're looking at your finances and your hardships, to stop being embarrassed about them and face them head on. A lot of my customers that problems grow because they don't want to face it, or they're embarrassed to talk to someone and they spiral out of control. If you know things are starting to get tough and you're going to have some difficulties, call those lenders, call, you know, those places and start addressing it head on and telling them that, you know, hey, this is coming up and I'm going to need help with this. And that's really going to help you in life when you take those problems on head on. And I think once you switch that mentality, you're going to see a lot more positive action in your life and in many different ways in your finances to start moving you in the right direction so you can accomplish those goals.
A lot of people, they think if I just like hide my bills and my credit card statements in the junk drawer in the kitchen, you know, they're just going to vanish and go away. And that's apparently that's never the case. So... Absolutely.
Denial never makes anything better.
No, it does not. So one last question here, and this is a question I do ask all my interviewees. So what does self-improvement look like for you, and how do you implement self-improvement in your day-to-day life as a financial professional?
I think of self-improvement as a lot of times those minor tweaks and adjustments that you make in your life to kind of realign yourself with what your goal and what your self-image is. We all have that goal of what we want to do and where we want to be and the kind of person you want to be. And thinking about that and realizing that, and for me, even writing it down of where I want to be, and that way I can keep working towards that and making those small adjustments. They're small today, but in 6 months, you look back at all of them and they're huge. So personally and professionally, that's been one of my biggest things is knowing what you want, looking at the steps that you need to take to get there, and then just start doing the little things. It's a long road, but those little tweaks will pay off.
Do you have any recommendations as far as like books on finance or any good reads that you would recommend to our listenership?
I'm honestly have not been a big book reader. Hasn't been my thing. I'm kind of a numbers guy.
Okay.
So I guess I wouldn't have anything like that for you.
That will, that's going to go ahead and wrap it up. Do you have any last thoughts or any advice you'd like to finish up with?
I think it's a good thing that you're doing here, Byron, trying to help your listeners. And I hope that your listeners, you know, take it to heart and start doing those little things to start working towards getting where they need to be. And the series that you're working on, I think, will help a lot of people. Because the first thing is that your listeners are wanting to wanting to find those answers. And so they'll be able to work towards that. And so just keep doing what you're doing.
All right. I appreciate it, Patrick.
Thanks, Byron.
All right, friends. That is all the time we have on this week's episode of the Rise Up Motivational Podcast. If this episode resonated with you in whatever platform you're on, go ahead and take a quick minute to interact with us. If you're on Apple Podcasts, be sure to press that subscribe button at the top, scroll all the way down, and leave us a rating or review. Your ratings and reviews helps our podcast be seen organically by more people. Or if you're listening to us on Spotify, just simply press that follow button to continue your listenership with us. Then finally, if you're on Instagram, go ahead and screenshot of this week's episode and post it on Instagram. Don't forget to tag me at Coach with Byron. The only way we grow is when you share our content through grassroots marketing. And I'm going to leave you like I do at the end of each and every episode, to make it your mission to be a blessing in someone's life. We love you guys and we greatly appreciate you. And we wish you all a wonderful, wonderful week. Take care.